We are back, my diamond-handed hodlers. Crypto winter is over. Crypto spring has sprung. Bitcoin, a new all-time high this week, over $69,000 briefly. The normies are casually buying in again on Coinbase over brunch. Why? A few factors. The Bitcoin ETFs are finally being approved by regulators. There are already 10 U.S. Bitcoin funds. More than $50 billion have poured into them already. We have this halving on the horizon, which is going to slow the rate of new Bitcoin supply and, you know, supply and demand. It is the next gen gold standard. It is my largest crypto holding, as it seems to be for most people. The market cap for Bitcoin is bigger than 99 of the next most valuable cryptos combined. And when Bitcoin moons, it pulls the whole lot of them up with it. So how are we playing this? Is Bitcoin going to keep bouncing off that 69K ceiling? Or are we going to get new highs and pull everything up even further? Today on Dumb Money, how we are leveraging Bitcoin.
This is Dumb Money Live.
Hey there, Dave here along with Chris and Jordan. We are Dumb Money. Welcome to Dumb Money Live. Quick reminder, whoa, good thing this coffee cup was empty. Smash the like button. Like the smash button. That's all it takes to wake up the algorithm this morning. Chris, Jordan, how are you guys?
I'm great, man. I'm great.
Back in my studio, the comfortable surrounds.
Welcome home, man. Welcome home to Texas.
It's good to be home, and it's good to see the market green again today. It's not just the crypto market. The S&P and NASDAQ also have recently hit all-time highs. Everything's looking up except for my long-term stocks. Tesla and Apple fanboy here. My portfolio been held back a little bit. But for me, the kind of unexpected win in my portfolio was crypto. I have not touched anything since the last crypto spring. I had my 60-40 split of Bitcoin and ETH. It's more like 70-30 now. But Chris, I know you're doing more creative things now that Bitcoin ETFs are a thing. But first, I want to talk about your tweet yesterday. You said that you posted your simple forever crypto thesis, that there's going to be an $80 trillion wealth transfer over the next 20 years. You say that for every gold-loving boomer out there, there are 1,000 millennial and Gen Z Bitcoin hodlers. So explain yourself.
Yeah, so basically, if you think about the next 20 to 25 years, you're going to have this situation play itself out millions and millions of times. And I hate to be dark about this, but people die. And when they die, their kids are going to often get either a key to a safety deposit box that has a bunch of gold in it, or or they're going to get a call from Murray, the financial advisor who manages the family's money. And when he's going over the holdings, he's going to get to a point where he says, you know what? And then we have like 2% of your portfolio in gold. And a lot of the millennial kids and Gen Z kids who are inheriting that $80 trillion are going to take those gold bars out of the safety deposit box. They're going to go to the local gold and silver exchange, if those still exist. They're going to cash it out. They're going to tell Murray, sell the gold ETF. I want to be in Bitcoin. I want to have exposure to Bitcoin. It's the simplest thesis.
And it's easier to do than ever. And it's more regulated in the sense that there are these ETFs that actually hold Bitcoin, spot ETFs. There are also strategy ETFs that are based on Bitcoin futures and that sort of thing.
Don't overthink it. No, don't overthink it. We already have a roadmap for this. It already exists. For generations, humans have wanted to have assets that are anti-government, assets that kind of live outside of the system. Gold has always been that asset for a very long time. For most of the population, gold has been that asset. It's not going to be that asset over the next 20, 30 years. Or if it is, it will be to a much smaller degree. The world is going digital. It's undeniable. The younger generation is digitally native. They're not afraid of this stuff. For every one old school gold bug, you know who I'm talking about. Those boomers that just talk about gold. Oh, God, I hate that asset class. I'm not even a crypto guy. You know that. But for every one of those old dudes, there's like 1,000, I don't know, maybe 10,000 young people who are all about Bitcoin and crypto. right? So the market size for this type of mentality is actually exponentially larger as you kind of go from the boomer generation to the Gen Z generation. And all that has to happen is transfer of wealth. That's it. This is not about the next 6 months. It's not about the next 2 years. It's about the next 20 years. It's about the next 20, 25 years. I don't see how that doesn't unfold unless there's some disruption, major disruption to crypto and Bitcoin. Maybe it's regulatory. Perhaps, yes, it's government shutting it down. Unless there's something, maybe there's a hack that basically takes down the entire crypto market or all of Bitcoin because we have supercomputers in 6 or 7 years that are able to kind of, you know, somehow crack that code and mess with the security of Bitcoin and other crypto. I don't know, but unless something happens, I think the default thesis here has to be as simple as $80 trillion getting transferred from boomers to millennials and Gen Z, and a small portion of that money going into Bitcoin. It's simple, guys. We're not.
I want to hear Jordan's take, because as much as you say you're not, okay. Chris, you say you're not a crypto guy, but
I'm
you
not.
Are. But you are a crypto investor. But Jordan has been way more anti-crypto than you traditionally. So I want to hear his take.
Okay, but says what he's going to say, I want to make sure this is clear. I don't actually believe in any of this. I'm not a big crypto guy. I'm not a big Bitcoin guy. I'm definitely not a gold guy. But listen, I'm not invested in gold. And I would have no interest in investing in gold. But if I had the opportunity to invest in gold in the early days of its institutional formation, as those gold ETFs were coming around, as they were being formed, as gold became institutionalized as an asset class, I would love to have gone back then and invested in gold. And that's exactly why I'm investing in Bitcoin today, because we're at that same point of this institutional formation of it becoming an asset class that is investable for every single person in the world. And it's legitimized as a result of that. And I think there will be this kind of somewhat of a FOMO use case for a lot of people. And to some people, it's just simply diversification, the same way that gold has been for decades. That's why I'm investing in Bitcoin, not because I think it has these great use cases, not because I believe that Bitcoin should be the new currency in 10 or 20 years. It's because of what other people are going to do.
You're not a crypto guy. You don't think it has a viable use case, but you do think you're more of a trend guy. And if it's on trend and there's money moving into it, you want to be in there first.
Dave, I'm arbitraging human behavior. That's what we do at Dumb Money. We simply arbitrage information. We arbitrage change that's happening in the world. And this is change. Going from gold to something that's actually much more accessible and makes a lot more sense to the new generation during a major period of wealth transformation, that's change. And that creates opportunity. That's what I'm investing in here. That's what we do. Right? Like I'm trading human behavior. Like I don't have to personally have a strong opinion on whether Bitcoin will become the default currency of the world in 20 years. I'm not saying it will or won't. I just don't care. It doesn't matter. It plays no part in my Bitcoin thesis.
Before we hear how you're actually trading human behavior, let's hear from Jordan.
I just don't care about it. It doesn't. If you want to invest in Bitcoin, be my guest. And it'll probably go up. I don't know. I might miss out. It's not something that interests me. I'm interested in companies and earnings and, you know, just the boring things that have to do with investing. For me, I think Bitcoin is just a waste of natural resources. It's a waste of my time to even think about.
You know, those two things are not mutually exclusive, and you might be totally right about Bitcoin being a complete waste of energy and everybody's time. You could be 100% right. In fact, I would actually put my chips on your side that you are right. But that might have zero impact on Bitcoin as an investment over the next 10, 15, 20 years, because it's not about you or about whether Bitcoin, whether it's right or not, right?
I agree. And like I said, I think it'll probably go up. I just don't understand the reasons that it keeps going up. People keep buying it.
It's the same as gold to me. And that's why I have a holding in it and I haven't touched it. And it's kind of my FOMO. What if I don't want to be left out? If this asset class is the, you know, if it goes to $200,000 a coin, I'm going to be really happy that I have my coins, but I didn't put any money that I wasn't willing to lose because it's a speculative thing for me.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this for a minute. The market cap of gold, Jordan, is roughly $14.5 trillion. Now that I believe that is gold bullion. That's gold reserves. That's all the world's gold reserves is $14.5 trillion. The market cap of Bitcoin right now, I think, is about $1.2 trillion, something like that, right? So we're looking at about 12x. That's kind of all you need to know.
Can you say that Bitcoin is just going to be the market cap of gold? Is that kind of what you're trying to say?
That's exactly what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I just don't see a reason for that.
But do you see a reason for gold to be valued at $14.5 trillion of gold bullion?
As humans, we value things that are
no, Jordan. No, this is gold. This is investable.
I know. I'm saying that gold actually has like use cases that you can use, like gold is needed industrially.
Not that value.
The price doesn't justify any known use case.
We're not talking about gold jewelry here. We're talking about this is.
But you still have to pay that market value for whatever gold that you consume, right? So there is some effect on the industrial uses and the, you know, and on jewelry uses.
But once you remove that. Yeah. I don't care. It doesn't matter. You're still talking about somewhere north of $10 trillion of basically BS. Okay. So that makes zero sense, but it has stood the test of time. This is not something that just happened where we can be like, well, that's an anomaly. No, it's not an anomaly.
Yeah.
It's been that way for a very long time. And we now know for a fact that the way that humans think about these things, as stupid as gold bullion, is they're irrational permanently, in perpetuity. It's not a thing that comes and goes. The concept of having something like gold that sits outside the system.
That I'm talking about gold. I don't care about gold either. Like I invest in companies.
That's the whole point.
Neither
do I. That's the whole point, though.
I'm interested in investing in companies. So if that makes me a boomer to invest in companies, like I don't, whatever.
It's not mutually exclusive. I love investing in companies. That's what I do. But it's not mutually exclusive. You have this amazing orb opportunity. And it's not one that happens over weeks and months. It's one that happens over decades.
Okay, so people are saying, hold on. People are saying MicroStrategy is a company. MicroStrategy is a shell for leveraged Bitcoin. That's all it is.
That's all it is. Yeah. The actual value of MicroStrategy is minuscule relative to where it's trading at right now.
Yeah, it's just a way to trade leveraged Bitcoin. That's all it.
And we'll talk about by the way, before this episode's over, we are going to talk about the different ways that we are trading leveraged Bitcoin, why we're trading leveraged Bitcoin, what the strategy is, how we're doing it. But before we get to that,
and that's what I want to hear, because I'm not doing that. I am just straight up holding traditional old timey Bitcoin in a cold wallet. And I've got my notes here, Chris. I want to hear what you're doing, because you get creative with your investments in a way that most people don't.
Okay, so I also have just straight up Bitcoin, and that's from my forever Bitcoin, right? And I hold it, And I feel like I'm going to have it for the next couple decades, because I do feel that this is an arb opportunity on human behavior. It's a demographic shift that we know is happening. We know that old people die and that young people get the old people's money, and that the young people think a little bit differently about money than old people. And the most obvious difference is they probably have zero interest in gold and more interest in Bitcoin, period. It's that simple. I think it's such a clean strategy. It's so clean that I want to know nothing else about Bitcoin other than that one thing. But I do also think that there are times when it is kind of fun to try to trade Bitcoin. And I do it. I'm not proud of it, but I do it. And it could blow up in my face. But I did have this thesis that, you know, there would be a lot of hype going into this halving of Bitcoin, which everyone's been talking about. There's no new news there. If you're not aware, the Bitcoin halving, how do you say it? Happens in April, right? Mid-April.
Yeah.
And so basically we'll have less Bitcoin produced daily. But the more interesting thing is that this is happening around the same time as the growth stage of all of these Bitcoin ETFs, right? So as Bitcoin became institutionalized, a lot of these Bitcoin ETFs and a lot of the banks that are now institutionalizing Bitcoin as an asset class for their clients have barely even had time to add it to their marketing brochures. They really haven't even had time to even train their people on how to talk about this. And that's what I think most investors don't understand, is that so much money is held up, not with self-directed investors, but with managed money, right? Yeah. So a lot of this managed money has been kind of afraid to touch Bitcoin because it hasn't really been approved. It hasn't been institutionalized. There wasn't really a clean way to do that. Now, hey, with all the big Bitcoin ETFs and all the blessing of all the banks, all the RIAs, registered investment advisors, all of the people that are managing the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars all have the blessing and the marketing materials and really the validation to go out and say, hey, I think it's a good idea to maybe have 1 or 2% of your portfolio in Bitcoin. And I have a way to do it. And my firm has a way to make money off of it.
Yeah. Most importantly, and that's right? What I think. I think that my thesis is a little bit different than you, because I think you're primarily saying that young people are not going to be into gold. Old people have gold, and when that wealth transfer happens, the young people are going to ditch the gold and put it into Bitcoin.
Yeah,
I think that that will happen, but I think that right now with these ETFs, it's not the young people. The young people know how to open a Coinbase account and just do it themselves. It's the old people. It's the old money. It's the bigger accounts that now, for the first time, are getting exposed to a way to buy Bitcoin that isn't in a sketchy marketplace somewhere.
Yeah, what Chris is saying is that there's two things. One, yes, what you're saying is true, Dave, but also that once, you know, wealth transfer happens, that, you know, whatever assets were held in those accounts will not be held. They will transfer that money into Bitcoin.
Also, I want to make something clear. When I say young people, Dave, I'm talking about people in their 30s and in some cases their 40s. As opposed to people in their 70s and 80s and 90s, okay? So the thing is, like, most of the young people that I'm referring to actually cannot buy Bitcoin through a wallet. They don't know how. They're not like us, right? They don't have access to that stuff. Most of the 30 and 40-something-year-old people, most, the only way that they have to invest in Bitcoin is through these ETFs.
You become such a boomer that you're referring to 40-year-olds as young people.
I'm a young person.
You are now a dinosaur that you're calling young people in their 40s.
I'm on the upper cusp of the young people that I'm referring to right now. And although I do know how to do all that stuff, virtually none of the other dads in the neighborhood know how to do it. But they all have an interest in investing in Bitcoin, quite honestly. And And now that they have ETFs, and it just, it feels more responsible, a more credible a way to do it. But let's talk about timing here.
So I want to see here. The logistics, like how are you doing this differently than just opening a Coinbase account?
Yeah. So I Robin do feel Hood. Like, to be clear, the strategy is I do think the next, 30 to 60 days, we are in this building stage of ETFs. And I think we will continue to see, most likely, as long as the market is stable, I think there's a better chance that we'll see more inflows and less inflows into these ETFs. There's been a steady stream of inflows over the past 1 to 2 weeks. I think if the market stays stable, I could see that continuing. And then the added pressure of the Bitcoin halving when we have less Bitcoin done daily. I think it's just an obvious thing, right? So I want to say this. I have done a few things. One, inside of my Coinbase account, they have something called futures, and it's actually fairly easy to do. They do cap you on how much they'll let you buy with these futures. They'll only allow you to buy futures for the following month. So I think right now, actually, it's just March. April aren't even out yet. But you can buy Bitcoin and Ethereum futures. And what that means is that you get like 3-to-1 leverage. So you get 3x leverage on your Bitcoin investment. Now they cap how much you can buy. And because you're investing with leverage, it means you could lose all your money. And it means that if Bitcoin goes down like 20% or 10 or 20%, they start taking your money.
Bitcoin did when it hit its high, it dropped 10% like the next day and has since recovered. But it's so volatile that futures, the financial advice for not financial advice is futures are risky.
They're super risky and you can get wiped out. This is not financial advice, but for people that are looking for ways to lever up in Bitcoin, that's one of the ways that I'm doing it. The other way.
Leon just mentioned that he does calls on BITO.
Okay, well let's
which talk that's about if you're that. If you're just in a standard brokerage account and you have options access, then that's probably a decent way to
So I did that as well. So I actually have calls on BITO. BITO is a Bitcoin. It's a Bitcoin ETF, but it works with like futures. So it's not.
Yeah, it's a futures. Clean. It's one of the older futures ETFs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Before they approved spot ETFs. Yeah. They found ways to work around the system, and using futures, they basically were able to package up an ETF product that essentially mirrors the price of Bitcoin, but uses free futures to do it.
Yes. So what I want to do is to buy options on EBIT, which is the big, I think it's like the BlackRock highly liquid Bitcoin ETF. The problem with buying options on BITO, which I do own, I'm not doing anything crazy. Mine are like, April in the money options, is the liquidity's not great. The spreads are not great. So you kind of get ripped off when you buy and sell these options. You have to be really careful. And then, of course, like any other option, options are like wildly risky. When you invest in an option, you have to be prepared to lose 100% of that investment. That goes without saying. Again, not financial advice. This is just another method that I'm using to lever up in Bitcoin for the short term. The third option is MicroStrategy. And that's actually something that I did last week. It worked out really well, especially when I forgot to sell my position on Friday during expiration. And I was so freaked out because on Saturday morning, like I got stuck with an insane amount of MicroStrategy stock, which is the last stock I just want to be stuck with, that crazy stock. If Bitcoin would have crashed over the weekend. Fortunately, Bitcoin it did great over the weekend and it all worked out. And it was a great trade, but I have since moved out of MicroStrategy. I just think there's a lot of funky stuff that happens with that company, with the leverage, the announcement that they made this week about raising $600 or $700 million of debt so they can buy more Bitcoin. That guy, Saylor, he's a lunatic. It's fine. It's another.
Or a believer. Honestly,
It's probably, you know what? I think the options in MicroStrategy might even be a little more liquid with better spreads than Beto, but I just want it. I just wanted to keep it clean. So there are ways to leverage.
What about, you know, we talked about some of the mining stocks earlier. Are you involved in any of those now? I had CleanSpark on my like watch list for so long, and it was just up every day. I just was like, why did I not just pull the trigger on that? It's pulled back a little bit, but with the halving coming up.
No, Dave, I'm taking the simpler route and getting back to the overall Bitcoin thesis. I feel like this new bull run cycle that we're in, every time this happens with Bitcoin, I think it strengthens like the mentality around it being something that's going to be there forever. Right? Because it's one thing when you suffer through one or two crashes, you suffer through multiple crashes, and every time it comes back and it comes back stronger, you now have that mental kind of memory, right? You have that muscle memory of, okay, I've seen this happen 2, 3, 4, 5 times before, and you know it's just part of the cycle. And I think it's a really big deal for Bitcoin, quite honestly. Because we're getting to a point now where people are just like, you know what, dude, this is not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. Like, and now it's becoming institutionalized. There's really only one thing left for Bitcoin, and that's governments, right? Like government buy-in. I don't know that that's ever going to happen, though. It might. And if it does, like, watch out. But I don't know that that's ever going to happen. I'm not sure it needs to happen. I think from a risk standpoint, there is a concern about a government, you know, hammering down on crypto and Bitcoin. That would be
some countries. We always have the possibility that we'll have a Fed coin. Although I did hear Jay Powell say this morning that he is continuing to say that that's not going to happen without congressional buy-in.
Yeah, guys, like that's always the wild card with this, right? But it's a risk I'm willing to take. You can't get reward without risk, guys. Like we've said this a million times, there is no reward without risk. So every investment, every trade, every strategy has an element of risk to it. It's just really important to understand what that risk is before you get into the trade. So I understand what the risk is on Bitcoin and crypto at large. I feel like I need to have part of my portfolio in it for the long run. And for me, Dave, I don't know if you're comfortable discussing what your number is. My long-term number for what I believe is the right allocation to Bitcoin and crypto at large in my portfolio is about, I don't know, I'm going to say like 6 to 8%. So yeah. That's where I'm comfortable.
My number right now is 10%. And with Bitcoin going up and Tesla going down, I am over allocated in Bitcoin right now.
Yeah. I think that's kind of in the range. I think like that 5 to 10%, it's in the range. I guess you can say if I add up all of it, I'm probably close to 10% as well. Jordan, you're not 10%.
No, I've got like a little bit, but I mean,
you know. Oh, you do have a little bit, man. What do you got?
Tiny amount.
What do you got? Some soul? What do you got?
I've got Ethereum.
Just Ethereum, no Bitcoin?
Yeah, just Ethereum.
Okay, that's interesting.
Like I said, I just have it. I don't believe in it. I don't do anything with it. Yeah. I think I have it because you wanted me to buy some NFTs, and I was like, fine. Those went to zero, I think. And
yeah, Chris, how are your NFTs doing? Chris, you actually texted me that our CryptoPunks are up. I had no idea.
Dave, they're doing just fine. Okay, they're doing just fine. And damn,
again, I feel like that CryptoPunk is like, it's kind of like investing in Bitcoin for me, in that it is a limited supply of something that is considered the OG of a asset class. And if NFTs are ever going to be a thing, I want to be only in the OG 10,000 ever created ever and on this channel, we own a very large percentage of the entire float for CryptoPunks.
We kind of do. But we won't talk about that. Now people are starting to talk about milking cats.
Yeah,
you did have a cat
milk. Well, they've been talking about that the entire episode. You just haven't noticed.
I sold almost all of my cats before the big dump. Okay,
except for the ones you really liked that you've been nurturing.
I kept two of my nicest cats. Those are for life. It could go down to one penny. Those are lifers.
Pictures of those cats still on the internet? Like, is that still?
Oh yeah, they're killer. So I have one of the two that I have is like the Hello Kitty cat of that collection, and it's a really sweet NFT. And then I have another one that I think is almost equally as cool. But that's just like art. That's like art.
I get it. Right? I get it. I am looking for a way to display my NFT in the house. It just doesn't seem to work. I don't even have a way to look at it in my Apple Vision
Pro.
Dave,
can you show yours? It's so nice. Like, it's so
nice. Nice.
I
don't have an easy way to show it here today.
If you ever sell it, I would be open to buying that from you.
Make the right price. I mentioned in our group chat the price that I'm looking for. So if you want to go that high, I'm a seller.
Not going to 5 million. Not doing it. I do have another I'm going to tease. If we do an episode next week, I'm going to tease the episode right now so that if you're not a subscriber of Dumb Money, you know to subscribe and hit the bell, because it might be a weird time when we do it. But on running earnings for next week, and if we could squeeze an episode early next, like Monday, if you want to do a Monday episode, let's do that.
Earnings? March 12th.
Earnings are Tuesday, I think, right? Or Wednesday?
Whatever the 12th is. I have to pull up a calendar to count the days.
Yeah.
Tuesday, yeah. So is it before or after?
I would assume it's after market, but if possible, it'd be awesome to do a show on Monday. Listen, I'm not going to say if what I have to say about On Running is positive or negative or something in between, but I have things to say. I have research that I've done. And we've traded.
You haven't decided
this
if you're positive or negative on running yet, it sounds like, but you're going to make a decision before Tuesday.
I have a little more research to do, but I'm seeing some really interesting things. So I want to talk about them next week. But back to Bitcoin. Dave, what do you think between now and April? Do you think, are we going to like crash through? I have this gut feeling that we are going to crash through, hit all-time highs, and just keep running. But that's just a gut feeling. And it's really based on if the market remains stable.
Yes.
I think it
really has so much more to do with just the broad picture, not just what is Bitcoin going to do on its own. I think that if the market continues to rally and people feel like they've got some money to throw around, then they throw a little bit more into Bitcoin. And people that I know firsthand who haven't looked at their Coinbase account for years, months, and even years are now reopening the account and looking, oh, maybe I should buy a little more. So like, I feel like whenever it goes up, it accelerates, and it has accelerated all year long. And we hit a new magic number that, you know, if it can hit 69,420, I think we're going to the moon.
Okay, so let's talk about the short-term risk, though. The short-term risk is that there are people that are levered now, because we have ways to lever into Bitcoin where we really, like, we always have, but it's been
I'm staying
all,
away
like,
from that. I'm just a traditional buy the Bitcoin and never sell it.
But Dave,
I'm a collector. I'm a Bitcoin collector.
Okay, but Dave, what I'm saying is now that people are taking levered positions in Bitcoin, right? Some of us. What that means is that if Bitcoin does start to drop, you could see increased volatility on the downside.
And people who get wiped out and then who say, I'm out, I'm never investing in this crazy crypto again.
Also, because of the ETFs, people are now investing in those ETFs. And in a down market or any type of market hiccup, people need liquidity, they might tap into those Bitcoin ETFs and exit part of their position simply to get liquidity or to meet a margin call across their entire portfolio. So now that Bitcoin's becoming more institutionalized, it's going to experience the benefits of that, but also the cons of that, which are sometimes it will get hit just because people need liquidity and they're pulling liquidity out of these big ETFs. So those are things that Bitcoin investors need to understand that are new elements that did not exist as much before.
And I'm just looking, do you happen to know what the margin requirements are for these ETFs? Is it, are they marginable? Is it going to like increase your portfolio's?
I don't know. I actually have not purchased any of those ETFs yet, because I'm simply buying options and buying futures through Coinbase and then options on the ETFs. I would assume that they would probably be marginable, but I'm not sure to what extent. But it's part of the risk profile. I think we'll see added volatility because of all of this. But I do think there's this time period of inflows. And I think the inflow, you know, the period of inflows could last, I believe, for many months. If you just think about the mechanics of the banks getting on board, getting their marketing material, getting educated. I mean, guys, we're talking about many, many tens of thousands of RIAs that are representing trillions and trillions of dollars of wealth. And it's not like they're speaking to their clients every day. They're not rebalancing those portfolios every day. But the way that it works in wealth management is that you regularly kind of go in and you do speak to clients and you do that sort of update and analysis on their portfolio. You rebalance, you talk about new products. And that is going to happen this year with almost every RIA in the country. So,
and I'm seeing some people say that there's a 50% margin maintenance requirement on maintenance, 25% on Robinhood. I just checked HODL happens to be my favorite ticker for a Bitcoin ETF because I can remember it. So I Googled that real quick. That's the VanEck Bitcoin Trust, and it has a special maintenance requirement of 100% through Schwab. So it varies by broker and all of that. But if you buy it in your primary brokerage account that already is on margin, it does increase the sensitivity to a margin call.
I want to say something people are asking about, like Coinbase as a stock. I don't have an opinion long or short on Coinbase. I have a very clean thesis on Bitcoin. So I'm going to express my investment in the cleanest way, right? Not that Coinbase is a bad investment. It's just that would introduce new factors. And I want to stick with a very clean thesis just around the asset class of Bitcoin. And I want to keep it as simple as possible. And that's why I'm not messing around with Coinbase right now. And I did MicroStrategy last week, but I've kind of moved it to Beto this week. So I'm not saying anything long or short on Coinbase. So that's it. Any questions? I know people like to talk about crypto and Bitcoin for hours and days. I don't. One thesis. It's simple.
Very simple. Keep it
I
simple.
Just like, dude, I don't need to think about it, man. I don't need to talk about it. I don't need to analyze it. I don't need to spend. Listen, you know this, guys. I spend hours a night trying to build my top of funnel for social arb trading, looking for opportunities, trying to detect change in the world and connect the change to investable opportunities in the market. I don't need to be doing that with Bitcoin. Ever, for the most part, because like my thesis on Bitcoin will probably be the same in 5 or 6 or 10 years as it is today. So it's the closest thing that I have to a set it and forget it investment, which I don't like personally. But that it's the closest thing I have to that. And I'll play around.
It's a FOMO investment for me, and I think that it was the interesting thing to me was that you are actively trading it and using leverage and doing some things that I wasn't expecting for a set it and forget it type of asset class investment.
Dave, just for this moment in time, I do not foresee me doing this in 2 or 3 months. I don't. This is like, that's why we're doing the show today. I thought it was kind of I never do this with Bitcoin, but I do think we're in this period of inflows. And as long as the market stabilized, I think there's a better, you know, better than 50-50 chance that that will continue, which would simply support Bitcoin going into the halving next month. So I like the risk reward on it. We'll see how it ends up for me. If it doesn't, it's not the end of the world, but it won't impact my long-term investment on Bitcoin. That's just going to stay there, period. I'm not touching it. Okay. I don't care.
Not adding to it at these levels.
If something crazy happens and it drops considerably, like down to 30 or 20 again in that range, yeah, I mean, I might add more, but not really, because it's not something I care to think about. It's a part of my portfolio, and I think over the next 20 years, it will outperform. I do. I think it will outperform because of where it is in the cycle. It's all about tens of trillions of dollars of transferred wealth. And it's going to get a piece of it. You know it is. You know it is.
And Jordan, you're just have a little bit of Ethereum in a leftover wallet somewhere, but you're not looking to add more, not looking to do anything with Bitcoin.
Probably not.
Jordan, let me ask you a question. If you were able to go into the future and see what Bitcoin is trading at in 10 years or 5 years, and then come back to today, and it was like trading at like 5 to 10, would you still not do it because you just don't like it? I'm just curious.
Go into the future and see what companies are valued.
No. If you could only,
you know what I mean? if I can go in the future and see asset prices, I'll just look at companies.
No, that's you all I care only about. Can see Bitcoin. That's it. And you can't see anything else with Bitcoin. It's like, wow, right. Bitcoin's gonna 5x over 5 years. That's crazy. And then you're back to today. Are you still like, I just don't believe in it. It takes too much energy. I don't want to. And that's okay. If you're like, I don't want to support that market. Is it that type of thing for you? Or
it's,
you
just. I don't see any value in it. So I don't buy things that I don't see value in.
But if you saw the future and you saw.
But what, again, happen. but I don't see a value, like, you know, price is what you pay, value, you know, value is totally different. I just don't see any real value. I don't, you know, it's not my thing.
Oh man, I get it.
It's like you're buying it because other people are buying it, and that's fine. That's a thesis, and I get it, and I have nothing against anybody doing it.
But Chris's main way of investing is buying things because he doesn't care about on running shoes. He doesn't care about the shoe. He just cares that other people want the shoe.
I care that there's a business making money underneath.
Yeah, I know. You're so reliable, Jordan. I hate it. I hate how stubborn you are in your thinking, but you're just so reliably stable.
I feel like that's investing, right? And I, you know, just like I'm not going to buy something waiting for a short squeeze because I don't see value in it. Could you make a ton of money doing it? Yes, people have made tons of money on Bitcoin. People make tons of money on short squeezes. That's not what I do. That's not how I operate.
I know. it's
this is dumb money. Get out of here with all that rational, logical thinking, according to Ankh. All right.
Oh my God.
I think that's going to do it for this one, unless you have any final departing words.
No, I can't wait to talk about on running next week.
I don't care about on running.
It's going to be a good episode. So please, guys, subscribe, hit the bell. Dave's not allowed to ask you to subscribe anymore, but I never said I wouldn't. So
I'm allowed to ask you to hit the thumbs up before you head out.
Awesome.
Oh, and if you are listening right now and you're not watching, please. Find the podcast platform that you're listening to and figure out, it's always complicated, but there's a way to write a review on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcasts, do a review. We actually have, I saw 12,000 listeners in the past 30 days, which is way more than I ever thought we would. So there are people listening. help other people who are podcast addicts find it. Oh, and the new version of iOS 17.4 now has transcripts built into the podcast player. So you can just see what we're talking about. You can fast forward by reading the words and then tapping when you want to hear what we're saying. It's actually a really cool feature. All right, that's it. We're Dumb Money. We'll see you next week.